Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We've been looking at a series of news stories and op-ed pieces in the first hour of the show. We're going to be continuing with that in the second hour of the show, and then Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross will be on to discuss a series of things related to the Jewish lobby in the Middle East and what we might be looking at in the days ahead. And that's going to take place at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. I also wanted to mention that Gary Brummett is going to be on the show tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Gary's going to be discussing his role as an eyewitness to the events that surrounded Israel's attack on the USS Liberty in June of 1967. Gary has lived with this, of course, in the 40 years since, along with a number of other USS Liberty survivors. He's going to share with us his perspective, not only of what he saw that day, but in terms of what he believes was the massive cover-up of this attack and what was behind this attack within the corridors of American government and American news media. That's going to be Gary Brummett tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, talking about Israel's attack on the USS Liberty in June of 1967. There are a series of news stories today, of course, that we have already mentioned this hour without yet going into the details of each and every one of them. The controlled demolition of the American Republic by Douglas Herman. That's an excellent piece, Strike the Root, today, which I would commend to you. At LouRockwell.com, Bill Barnwell has a new piece entitled TV Evangelist John Hagee Wants War with Iran, and He Wants It Now. Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review has a post of his speech this last month entitled The Israel Lobby's Campaign for War, What Every American Should Know. Peter LaBarbera's Americans for Truth sends me information today indicating that an archbishop indicates the Catholic adoption agencies are already adopting to homosexuals. The Washington Post, of course, has a couple of interesting items related to a House panel authorizing subpoenas of officials of the Bush administration. Keep in mind that Paul Craig Roberts continues to be right about that story, that while they're talking about alleged wrongdoing on the part of the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Gonzalez, and also Mr. Bush, they're missing the most significant aspect of that misconduct, and that relates to both the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act federal court that Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Bush have continued to go around in regard to approving all kinds of surveillance operations that would be considered to be illegal unless evaluated and approved by the FISA court. Mr. Gonzalez hasn't been doing that. Mr. Bush hasn't been doing that. And those are, as Paul Craig Roberts points out, crimes. We're also dealing with the fact that in corporate media, the Zionist-controlled media, there's absolutely no mention of the National Security Agency's warrantless surveillance spying program and the extent to which Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Bush were directly involved in approving those activities. Are these high crimes and misdemeanors? Paul Craig Roberts seems to clearly believe that they are, and he's the former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan. So if Paul Craig Roberts is saying this, I think we've got a pretty good indication of what the real issues are, the issues that the Washington Post continues to miss. We talked about Joe Kress's post today at newswithviews.com entitled Rodents in the Belfry, talking about the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, and Mr. Kress goes all the way back to the time of Colonel House in the Woodrow Wilson administration and takes us right up through the Bush regime's involvement with the Carlyle Group as a means of understanding the larger implications of the role of oil companies, defense contractors, central bankers, and the Israeli lobby in creating a war for empire. Mark Dankos, America, will be back live from on the Republic Broadcasting Network's post today in San Antonio. Stay tuned.
That coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific. And it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP Research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP Research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420. And see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420. Or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross is going to join us at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. We're going to be discussing the Israel lobby, the power of Zionism in America, and speaking about what might be just across the bridge and around the next bend in the road in regard to a wider Middle Eastern war. That'll be Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. And I wanted to urge you, if you have not looked at Mark's website before, it's well worth your time. It is simply entitled Crescent and Cross. And I've mentioned before on the air that he has done an awful lot for me and for a couple of other hosts of RBN shows in regard to guest recruitment. Mark gets no remuneration for that whatsoever. He simply does it out of the goodness of his heart and the fact that he actually believes in the cause of freedom. And he's just a very, very fine person, and is now appearing with regularity in the pages of the American Free Press. So, again, if you're not familiar with him, you will find him in many, many places, particularly at Crescent and Cross, as well as occasionally on the shows of at least three guests or three hosts on this network, and also the pages of the American Free Press. I wanted to get back a little bit this morning to Paul Proctor's piece at newswithviews.com. This is a very compelling op-ed piece, I think, that Paul has posted here with Elizabeth Wright's news service, because it gets to the heart of what I think is an ongoing philosophical, moral, intellectual, and theological inconsistency on the part of many Christians in this country. It seems to me that on the one hand, there is a tremendous amount of what, for lack of a better term, one might call flag-waving on the part of many American Christians. And I realize that for many of these folks, their hearts are in the right place. When they wave the flag or they make reference to it, they are, in most cases, I think, thinking of images that go back to the days of Washington and Jefferson and Madison. So in that regard, I identify with that kind of flag waving when those are the images and the ideas that are associated with the American flag. That's all legitimate, it seems to me, up to a point, certainly. But in today's world, it becomes a little bit more problematic, and I don't hear a lot of people talking on the Christian right about some of the conflicts that are caused by the relationship between true Christian theology and much of the statism and unconstitutional practice that is going on with the American government today. How does some of this flag-waving square with a society and a government and a media culture that has embraced every form of perversion and moral outrage that one could possibly think of in the last 30 to 40 years? And how can we be that self-assured that the purposes of present-day America are lining up with God's purposes, as John Hagee seems to think that they do, especially when the Zionist lobby comes into the discussion? How can we be so sure of that when we see some of the things that are happening in the Middle East that suggest that we're not necessarily the guys with the white hats or wearing the white hat all the time? How do we deal with the fact that, of course, it is the Zionist lobby and Jewish influence in America that have had so much to do with the drive of this country toward full-fledged participation in world government? How do we square all of this with the very provable charge that Jewish money and Jewish logistical support in America has had so much to do with the success of organizations like People for the American Way, the American Civil Liberties Union, the Gay Human Rights Campaign Fund, the Planned Parenthood abortion racket, and a whole host of other things? This is a far more complex question theologically and morally and politically and culturally than many one-dimensional thinkers in the Christian right would seem to want to acknowledge. As I read Paul Proctor's piece today entitled When America is Gone, and you can find it at newswithviews.com, I think that he has an awful lot to say that begins to get to the bottom of some of these conflicts and troublesome inconsistencies. Paul makes reference, of course, initially in the article to the lyrics of Lee Greenwood's song, and Paul goes on to say that many today believe that America is God's modern-day ark, where those who reside within her are protected by divine providence. But even Noah's ark had its time. Going on with Paul's article, he says that at this writing, its deteriorating remains, according to experts, rests amid the mountains of Ararat. In its present state, were God's judgment to again come upon the earth, I seriously doubt that Noah's ark would provide much protection for anyone. And I dare say what remains of America in 2007, in its present and deteriorating state, isn't all that reassuring either. Even many of our nation's elected officials seem hell-bent on legislating away the very freedoms God has given us under the guise of national security. With countrymen like these, who needs enemies? Unless you consider America to be Mystery Babylon, there's really nothing specific I can find in Bible prophecy about its existence in the last days, much less it being a world superpower. So with that in mind, for just a few uncomfortable moments, let's think about the unthinkable. When America is gone, to whom will you pledge allegiance? Will it be to the Democrat, Republican, or Independent Party? Will it be to some political action committee, social organization, charity, faction, or militia? When the stock market crashes and money becomes as worthless as your property and portfolio, will you pledge your allegiance to those who initiate martial law, close the banks, and promise a new financial system, electronic currency, and national ID? Or will your allegiance be to a foreign nation that rises from the ruins of a global financial meltdown to take ownership of our bankrupt nation and its assets? Will it be to the commanding officer of an invading army that storms our shores to plant his flag on our fruited plain after some nuclear event? Will it be to doctors, emergency personnel, or pharmaceutical suppliers that have the necessary treatments, vaccines, and antidotes on hand to sustain you when a biological war or pandemic threatens the population? Maybe your allegiance will be to some charming and charismatic leader who emerges from the chaos and confusion brought on by a combination of catastrophes working wonders before your eyes and offering inspiring words and grandiose plans for peace and prosperity when all hope seems lost? Or will you simply pledge allegiance to your local church or pastor when America is gone because they've always been there for you in time of need? Maybe your allegiance will be to your friends because you know they'd give you the shirt off their back. Or is it to family because they're flesh and blood and the only ones you can really trust? But then it might be you're convinced there's no one you can trust but yourself. And to you, survival is all that really matters. So far as you're concerned, it's every man for himself. Jeremiah 17:5 says, "Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man, and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from the Lord." Unquote. Before that terrible day comes, if indeed it does, perhaps we should consider someone from the past whose allegiance never wavered, even after he lost everything but his own life. As Job sat in the dust, scraping his sores and remembering all of the health, wealth, family, and dignity that had been taken away while a handful of friends tormented him with innuendo and bad counsel, where was his allegiance? And did it waver with the terrible turn of events that were allowed to happen by the very one in whom he trusted? Even his own wife told him to curse God and die, Job chapter 2, verse 9. Fortunately, Job didn't take that advice. "No," he said, "what? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil?" Adding later, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him." In good times and in bad, Job's allegiance never changed. During Jesus' earthly ministry, he found the Jews' allegiance to be toward their temple and their homeland. And what did he tell them in Matthew 24, verse 2? "And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." And who was ultimately responsible for the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem and the Jews' exile from the promised land? Quoting Matthew 28, verse 20, was it not the same one who told his disciples, quote, "Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world," unquote? And was he not justified in relieving them of both? So where is your allegiance? And will it change when America as we know it is gone? And then Paul concludes by quoting Romans 10, verse 13. "For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved," unquote. And that's a very interesting piece, isn't it? Because it gets to the bottom again of what I think is a tremendous contradiction in the theology of much of what we call the Christian right or official evangelicalism. Have you ever noted how many of these folks are really close to the centers of American governmental and corporate and media power? What is the relationship of organizations like the National Religious Broadcasters and Trinity Broadcasting Network and the Zondervan Publishing Company and so many other ministries of this type that you can think of to the corridors of power? John Hagee's Cornerstone Church has obviously a very close relationship to those centers of power. How do you get people connected with the Israeli Mossad and the Central Intelligence Agency and the Anti-Defamation League and all of these other groups to support you and to send their representatives to your meetings? Christians United for Israel? Who and what is the new Israel today? Who and what is the Israel of God according to the New Testament? We'll take that up with Mark Glenn at 9 o'clock this morning. This is Mark Dankoff's America on RBN. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. These materials document the global leaders, political and religious working behind the scenes and their plans for us. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 1-888-211-1715. Again, 1-888-211-1715.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow. I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017. Or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross will join us at 9 o'clock in the morning, Central Standard Time. Tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on this show, Gary Brummett will be on. Gary survived Israel's attack on the USS Liberty 40 years ago in this coming June of 1967. He'll be on to tell us what he saw that day and also to give us his take on why the real truth about that attack was systematically kept from the American public on the part of a corporate Zionist news media as well as the American government. That's Gary Brummett, who's going to be on tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, talking about Israel's attack on the USS Liberty in June of 1967, and Gary's being an eyewitness to that event and having to live with all of the implications of it in these last four decades. We've been talking about a series of interesting news items today. I'm going to mention some of these again to you in case you want to look them up either today or later this evening when you're sitting at home with your computer. Bill Barnwell at LouRockwell.com has an important piece entitled TV Evangelist John Hagee Wants War with Iran, and He Wants It Now. Mark Weber of the Institute for Historical Review has a piece entitled The Israeli Lobby's Campaign for War, What Every American Should Know. That is a transcript of Mark's speech at the last IHR gathering, I understand, out in California, that also involved Eustace Mullins. The Americans for Truth organization, Peter LaBarbera's group, which informs the rest of us as to what's going on within the gay rights community, tells us that there's an archbishop who says that the Catholic adoption agencies are already adopting to homosexuals. That, again, can be found at Americans for Truth. The Washington Post has a couple of interesting items today. A House panel has authorized subpoena of officials in the Bush administration in regard to the firing of these U.S. attorneys. What it continues to miss, according to Paul Craig Roberts, is that Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Bush, in fact, should be charged with high crimes and misdemeanors, according to their involvement in circumventing the FISA court in regard to illegal surveillance operations on American citizens, and also their involvement in promoting the National Security Agency's warrantless spying program on American citizens, again through the circumvention of the FISA procedures. The Washington Post, once again, gets it partially correct, but it's what it leaves out that is most significant. And Paul Craig Roberts, I think, earlier this week, filled in the blanks for us in regard to both the FISA situation and the NSA spying scandal is the real Achilles heel of both Mr. Bush and Mr. Gonzalez in regard to having committed, in the words of Paul Craig Roberts, crimes. And if crimes were committed, where is the Congress of the United States in regard to this whole issue of investigation and possible impeachment? Is the House Judiciary Committee going to be looking into articles of impeachment? Don't bet on it. But that, again, of course, is the wider implication of the story that the Washington Post has today on page one that does not get at the real truth and does not get at the bottom of what Paul Craig Roberts clearly did earlier in the week. Episcopal bishops, according to the Washington Post today, in the United States are defying the Anglican Communion. The Anglican Communion apparently is getting increasingly concerned at just how far to the left Catherine Shepherd Shiori is, the new presiding bishop, as it were, of the American Episcopal Church. Catherine Shepherd Shiori is to the left of Karl Marx, probably, in regard to just about anything that you could think of. And she stands, I think, as a great symbol of just how apostate the American mainline denominations have become. Pro-gay, pro-abortion, pro-Gnostic. I suppose that she would endorse every brand of neo-Orthodox, feminist, Gnostic theology that's available out there in the so-called New Age movement. There are those in the worldwide Anglican Communion who may not be as conservative and traditional as I am, who nonetheless are really starting to sweat over just how far to the left this woman is and just how far to the left these Episcopal bishops in the United States really are. Keep an eye on that story in the days ahead, because I think it suggests that there is going to be some sort of a schism in the worldwide Anglican Communion in its relationship with the American Episcopal Church, and how much worse the situation can be in the Episcopal Church in the United States is a matter of some degree of speculation. I can't imagine it could get worse, but maybe it will. And when we look at some of the other mainline denominations in America, it becomes increasingly clear that traditional Orthodox Christian teachings on Scripture, on creation, on sin, on redemption, on the historicity of the resurrection of Christ and his virgin birth and his ascension into heaven, on a basic theistic view of the world, on basic Christian morality when it comes to matters of sex and abortion, all of this is being denied by most of the mainline Protestant churches in this country. And this gets back to something I think that Paul Proctor was hinting at his piece today entitled When America is Gone. How do we engage as Christians in a brand of unthinking flag waving when this kind of theological apostasy and political corruption is absolutely rampant in our land? You know, it's pretty hard, it seems to me, to reconcile those two things. I was talking at a Lutheran church the other night in a class in regard to the last few kings of Judah after the death of the last good king, King Josiah. He was killed at the Battle of Carchemish in the year 609 BC. And if you look at the listings of the kings that followed him leading up to the time of the Babylonian exile, it becomes increasingly clear that one could make a very strong case for the fact that present-day America bears a lot of resemblance to the post-Josiah Judah as it was ready to slide into the Babylonian exile. You see it in the quality of our leaders, or the lack of quality of our leaders. You see it in terms of the internal conditions that, according to the Old Testament, led God to allow the Babylonian exile to occur. That was, of course, chastisement and judgment. Is America getting close to that? And if it is, do we not need a more insightful, deep, theological and philosophical and moral and political and cultural analysis of what's happening in this country on the part of some of these so-called Christian right, religious right leaders who seem to be increasingly comfortable with being close to the corridors of power, who seem to be increasingly comfortable with the idea that every 4th of July and in every other occasion where it seems appropriate to talk about God constantly blessing America, America being a special covenantal nation with God, quoting Paul Proctor's imagery here, that America is somehow a Noah's Ark, a beacon of freedom and light in the world, a refuge for all of those who love freedom and God to come to. There are two different views, it seems to me, of what's going on in this country. And when I look at what has happened in my lifetime to America, I find it hard to accept this unthinking, uncritical endorsement of anything that American government and that American media and American churches and American educational institutions say is good and great. I think the exact opposite is true. We are a dying society. We are a dying republic. And that seems to be the theme of what Douglas Herman is talking about today at Strike the Root. If you're not familiar with Strike the Root, I don't agree, of course, with everything that they post. They would take issue probably with some of my views as well. But at the same time, there's some commonality there. And I've had a couple of posts that you can find in the archives of Strike the Root that go back several years. But Douglas Herman has an interesting piece today that's an exclusive to Strike the Root entitled The Controlled Demolition of the American Republic. Mr. Herman begins the piece with a quotation from Edmund Burke. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Mr. Herman then continues by saying that Edmund Burke, an Englishman of Irish birth, anarchist by inclination, is considered the father of Anglo-American conservatism, a defunct, nearly extinct sect, and also one of the earliest anarchist thinkers and supporters of the American Revolution. Few such men exist today in Anglo-American government. Burke stood up to a mad king named George, head of a vast and powerful empire, an empire determined to smash and subjugate a rebellious foreign colony. The king failed. The rebellion succeeded, and after 225 years, that republic spawned a powerful empire of its own, smashing and subjugating other foreign colonies. Why do so-called good men turn a blind eye toward uncontrolled tyranny? Is it fear only, or self-denial, or self-interest and quiet complicity with a series of high crimes and misdemeanors? To profit from the fruits of tyranny while standing at a distance, suggests Burke, is little different than steering the actual war machines over the bodies of innocents in order to steal the whole orchard. Not many of these so-called good citizens would dare do as Henry Thoreau suggested, quote, if 1,000 men were not to pay their tax bills this year, that would not be a violent and bloody measure as it would be to pay them and enable the state to commit violence and shed innocent blood, unquote. To withhold war taxes is the equivalent of withholding fuses and blasting caps from the mad bombers busy planting explosives throughout this, our own World Trade Center called America. Ah, but to withhold that tribute, that imperial war tax makes an enemy of all otherwise law-abiding citizens in the eyes of a militarist state. The controlled demolition of any great structure is done day by day. The painstaking plan of destruction in a structure this big requires 1,000 minor explosive charges applied by profiteers, cowards and men without consciences, bankers, lobbyists, generals, newsmen, senators, lawyers, clergy, with the complicity of millions of citizens too lazy, diverted, or fearful to inspect the support pillars of the country from time to time. The ongoing controlled demolition of the American Republic did not begin with the new Pearl Harbor attack of 9/11, nor with the old Pearl Harbor attack, the so-called day that shall live in infamy of December the 7th, 1941. Indeed, the controlled demolition of America has been an ongoing process for more than a century. Actually, Henry David Thoreau suggested the controlled demolition began somewhere between the time Americans sanctioned slavery in the newborn republic, quote, the state which buys and sells men, women, and children like cattle at the door of its Senate House, unquote, and also the Mexican War of 1846. Thoreau agreed with Jefferson's earlier remark, quote, even under the best forms of government, those entrusted with power have, in time and by slow operations, perverted it into tyranny, unquote. The rather weak Jeffersonian Republic, with some lofty ideals, within decades conquered its way into a continental empire. After the Mexican War land grab, after the debacle of the Civil War, and after the complete conquest of the native tribes west of the Mississippi, America no longer resembled the early republic. By then, the ideals remained only in school books, and for 50-odd years, from 1865 to 1915, America mostly minded her own business, licked her wounds and licked the native tribesmen, while the monarchies of Europe plundered the world and preached a decadent form of corporate Christianity. But in the past century, particularly powerful individuals began planting the explosive charges and detonators below an unwary American public. You could see the cutting charges on the support beams clearly by 1913. A secretive group of bankers quietly swayed a complicit group in Congress to pass the Federal Reserve Act. Of that act, a little-known Minnesota congressman named Lindbergh said, quote, this act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth. When the president signs this bill, the invisible government by the monetary power will be legalized. The people may not know it immediately, but the day of reckoning is only a few years removed. The worst legislative crime of the ages is perpetrated by this banking bill, unquote. The day of reckoning, only a few years removed. That day came exactly as predicted when a compliant former Ivy League dean named Woodrow Wilson beguiled the country into a world war that the country neither needed nor wanted. But the bankers who backed Wilson did. They wanted their money back, the money they had lent to those losing European monarchies. By armistice, November of 1918, the shaped charges and plastic explosives that would drop America into its own footprint were in place. Another larger world war, once again opposed by the people, followed by foreign wars in faraway Korea and Vietnam, once again sold to the American people as necessary, contributed to additional powerful charges planted on the support beams of America. But that First World War provided a blueprint for all to follow. Quote, at least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in the United States during the World War. That many admitted their huge blood gains in their income tax returns, unquote, wrote Smedley Butler, two-time Medal of Honor winner. Nearly a century later, the structure still looks solid enough from above. Likewise, from the side, the structure appears firm. But viewed from below, a network of cleverly designed charges will one day reduce the edifice to recyclable junk. Why? Because another edifice can always be built in her place, and at a tidy profit, too. Why would anyone knowingly wreck America? For power and profit. Ask yourself, in the past 4 years, have the profits of Halliburton and ExxonMobil risen or fallen? Have the profits, not to mention the power, of a few select individuals risen or fallen? In the meantime, has America as a whole risen or fallen? Has her debtor status, her reputation, her overall prosperity, her constitutional freedoms, her integrity as a nation-state risen or fallen? So why should the fate of this nation matter to those profiting by her destruction? They make money either way. You can bank on it. Congressman Lindbergh further declared, quote, I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. Already they have raised up a moneyed aristocracy that has set the government at defiance. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs, unquote. In 1963, John F. Kennedy tried to do just that, return the power of money back to the people through the U.S. Treasury. Within months, the secret cabal that runs the country since 1913 at least, bankers, corporate heads, intelligence officials, and top militarists at the Pentagon, had Kennedy shot and the crime covered up by a most agreeable media. JFK was but a bump in the road to the powerful militarists and bankers. Business as usual for the demolition experts who took him down. The same for anyone else who got in the way, like Paul Wellstone. Whether the victim of an unhappy airplane accident or suspicious assassination, Wellstone was a warning to anyone imprudent enough to question those long in power. War, the well-paid lobbying for war, the profitable expenditure for war, the enriching interest-bearing lending and borrowing for war, and the fast-buck gold rush contracting for war always serve a select powerful few, the so-called empire builders, while wrecking whichever country and impoverishing and sacrificing its citizens along the way. War correspondent Joseph Galloway wrote recently, quote, the Defense Department budget is now running at $500 billion annually, not counting the $2.3 trillion that went missing on September the 10th, 2001. The war in Iraq costs more than $2 billion a week. The long-term costs of Bush's great adventure, approved by the U.S. Congress, are now estimated at perhaps $2.5 trillion. If the war ended today, it would cost $65 billion to repair and replace the equipment worn out or destroyed in Iraq, unquote. And all of it considered necessary to somehow fight the war on terror, by the so-called good men of Burke's tyranny, none apparently asking who will pay in the long run. The controlled demolition of any great nation is death by 1,000 precise charges applied by the so-called good men of that nation, whether the good men of Nazi Germany or by God-fearing Americans. Not just the corporate heads, top bankers, high-ranking generals, famous newsmen, powerful senators, respected clergy, but the citizens, too lazy, too diverted, propagandized, or fearful to force or enforce good government from these demolition experts. Libertarian Justin Raimondo recently observed, quote, one can't help wondering how it is that the very people who got us into this war in the first place are still in position to get us into another and are rapidly proceeding to do so, unquote. Wittingly or unwittingly, many attached a fuse or a dynamite stick to the structure over time. The cutting charges were fastened to the beams, the detonators connected by others. When the structure falls, as it will in time, the crowd will gasp in surprise, itself all part of the plan. That is Douglas Herman today, The Controlled Demolition of the American Republic. You can find that piece at Strike the Root. Now, I've never talked to Douglas Herman. He's a USAF veteran, and he has also written a novel entitled The Guns of Dallas. And again, you can find not only this article, but a series of other essays that he has written at the Douglas Herman Archive and Strike the Root. But that is The Controlled Demolition of the American Republic. That's a completely different picture, isn't it, from much of what we're hearing from our corporate chieftains, and from those so-called religious right leaders who, in fact, are in league with these bankers, with these corporate chieftains, and with the Jewish lobby. To whom might we be referring? Bill Barnwell today is referring to John Hagee of Cornerstone Church in San Antonio. At lourockwell.com, you can read TV evangelist John Hagee wants war with Iran, and he wants it now. Mr. Barnwell goes on to say that if anyone still thinks that the radical end times prophecy movement is not a threat to peace and stability, think again. At the popular level, in terms of the TV preachers and the hot-selling prophecy books, The dispensational pre-trib stuff still reigns supreme. Most conservative-leaning evangelical churches in America today are heavily influenced by popular dispensational theology to some degree. Even churches and pastors that don't teach pre-tribulationalism are still influenced by dispensationalism to varying degrees. The most dangerous element of this prophetic paradigm, however, is its doom and gloom view of the world. And in most cases, those who have a fascination with the end of the world have a particular fascination with war and militarism as well. More problematic, it assumes that their war choice are not just their own foreign policy preferences or personal opinions. Rather, they are ordained by God. In 2003, more than a few pastors and influential Christian figures basically said that opposing the Iraq war was opposing God's end-time plan. According to evangelical end-times enthusiasts, if you oppose the Iraq war, you didn't just hate your country and the troops, now you are opposing God and the Bible as well. An even bigger obsession for dispensationalists has always been Israel. For the average dispensationalist, modern-day secular Israel is going to be the focal point in the end times. Therefore, if the Bible really does teach in Daniel 9:27 that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is going to be torn down for a rebuilt Jewish temple, why should any of us seek to prevent it? Sure, it might very well ignite a regional war and even ignite tensions around the world, but it's all part of God's prophetic plan. Not to worry, though, things might not get really ugly until after the rapture. So the Christians today who are cheering for events that would bring about World War III won't have to worry about it anyway. Unless, of course, they are wrong about the whole thing. Enter the Reverend John Hagee. Hagee is the pastor of Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, Texas, where he has 18,000 followers right in his own congregation. He also has a global TV ministry and has sold scores of prophecy books over the years. John Hagee is perhaps the most powerful and influential Christian Zionist figure in America. Hagee has a long history making strange predictions about world events that are almost always wrong. His books in the late 90s trumped up Y2K hysteria to ridiculous levels. He inaccurately predicted that the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin was the quote-unquote beginning of the end in the book of the same name. In every book he writes, he is constantly warning of catastrophe in various forms right around the corner. According to one of his fans, he supposedly just preached a sermon predicting that 2007 would be a significant year in Bible prophecy, and that his prophecy claims can be mathematically backed up by the biblical text. Given Hagee's prior success rate in making predictions, don't be shocked if 2007 doesn't shape up to be all that significant after all. As with all popular prophecy teachers, they are immune from making inaccurate predictions and false prophecies. Their followers simply forget or forgive them. Maybe they'll even claim that God changed his mind. Most don't even pay attention, though, and don't even realize their superstars are constantly revising their predictions and end times charts. However, Hagee is not just another goofy eccentric on TBN. He has political clout and regularly meets with influential national politicians. If you've ever watched him on TV, he clearly basks in this fact and drops little hints about his discussions with people in governmental authority and other positions of power. For years, Hagee has hosted A Night to Honor Israel and is founder and chairman of Christians United for Israel. Their goals span beyond supporting Israel, but also implementing a one-sided and radical approach to the Arab-Israeli problems in the Middle East. There is no nuance to their policy prescriptions, and ironically, or perhaps not so ironically, the agenda of Hagee and his group would actually make matters much worse in the Middle East. And he has more than a few fans out there. He's not been afraid to remind his church and television audience repeatedly over the years that there are, quote, millions in America and around the world watching this program right now, unquote. Whatever the number really is, what is clear is that Hagee is reaching many people and has a networking system that spans into the rich and powerful, some of whom are making national foreign policy decisions. If left up to Hagee, there would be a military strike against Iran today. Since last summer, Hagee has been practically foaming at the mouth for a new war with Iran. Why? Because he thinks it's in the interest that it is the rest of the world's job to fight Israel's wars, and because he thinks such a showdown is a piece of the puzzle in regard to Bible prophecy. To Hagee, there is no middle ground on this issue. God told Abraham he would, quote, bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you, unquote, Genesis 12, verse 3. That means if you aren't on board with wars that might be in Israel's interest, but not in the United States' interest, then you will be cursed by God, at least according to John Hagee. To see how bellicose, belligerent, and militaristic Hagee has become, just watch his speech at the American-Israeli Political Action Committee Washington Conference. Behind his thundering prose and love for the Jewish people is a militaristic and even fanatical mindset that is hoping and praying for the world to fall apart. After all, Jesus can't come back until it does, but all is well since Christians before the rapture will escape the worst of it. Unfortunately for the Jewish people, they still await another massive Holocaust, according to many dispensationalists. Anyone interested in this subject should read Gary North's column, The Unannounced Reason Behind American Fundamentalism's Support for the State of Israel. Here's an excerpt of Dr. North's column. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Take a look at this piece by Bill Barnwell today at lewrockwell.com. TV evangelist John Hagee wants war with Iran, and he wants it now. We'll be back with Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. Stay tuned.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long-life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush-proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Thanks.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross is going to join us at 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, which is just about 6 minutes from now. We're going to spend the last hour of the show talking about a series of things, including John Hagee and Zionism. We're going to be talking about the upcoming No More Wars for Israel conference that's scheduled for June now, I believe, in Southern California. Mark was recently on Michael Collins Piper's show. We might cover some of the things that he chatted with Michael about in that particular appearance. And if you're not familiar with Crescent and Cross, Google it and get to it and see all of the tremendous information that's there. Or you can go to my website, markdankoff.com, and go to the links page. And in the middle of the links page, you will find a logo that has a crescent and has a cross. Click on that particular logo, and it will take you straight to Mark Glenn's homepage. We've been talking before the commercial break about Bill Barnwell's excellent post today at lourockwell.com entitled TV Evangelist John Hagee Wants War with Iran, and He Wants It Now. Bill's piece quotes from Gary North's column, The Unannounced Reason Behind American Fundamentalism's Support for the State of Israel. Here's an excerpt of what Dr. North has to say, quote, Nothing can or will be done by Christians to save Israel's Jews from this disaster, for all the Christians will have been removed from this world 3.5 years prior to the beginning of this 42-month period of tribulation. The total period of 7 years is interpreted as the fulfillment of the 70th week of Daniel, Daniel 9, verse 27. In order for most of today's Christians to escape physical death, 2/3 of the Jews in Israel must perish soon. This is the grim prophetic trade-off that fundamentalists rarely discuss publicly, but which is the central motivation in the movement's support for Israel. It should be clear why they believe that Israel must be defended at all costs by the West. If Israel were militarily removed from history prior to the rapture, then the strongest case for Christians' imminent escape from death would have to be abandoned. This would mean the infinite delay of the rapture. The fundamentalist movement thrives in the doctrine of the imminent rapture, not the indefinitely postponed rapture. Every time you hear the phrase, Jesus is coming back soon, you should mentally add, quote, and 2/3 of the Jews of Israel will be dead in soon plus 84 months, unquote. Fundamentalists really do believe that they probably will not die physically, but to secure this faith prophetically, they must defend the doctrine of an inevitable Holocaust. This specific motivation for the support of Israel is never preached from any fundamentalist pulpit. The faithful hear sermons, many, many sermons, on the pre-tribulational rapture. On other occasions, they hear sermons on the Great Tribulation, but they do not hear the two themes put together. Quote, we can avoid death, but only because 2/3 of the Jews in Israel will inevitably die in a future Holocaust. America must therefore support the nation of Israel in order to keep the Israelis alive until after the rapture, unquote. Fundamentalist ministers expect their congregations to put two and two together on their own. It would be politically incorrect to add up these figures in public. That's Dr. Gary North, and talking specifically from his unannounced reason behind American fundamentalism's support for the state of Israel, that is in turn quoted today by Bill Barnwell at lourockwell.com in Bill's excellent piece, TV Evangelist John Hagee Wants War with Iran, and He Wants It Now. This is Mark Dankos, America on RBN. We'll be back with Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross. Stay tuned.